is.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's all about finance lately, and we brought on Uncle Zach, the mortgage broker from sunny downtown DY Northern Beaches, to talk about everything that's happening with loans and the big hole in your pocket, the thing that's going to blow the biggest hole in your pocket. We're going to talk with Zach about it. Stay tuned.
Episode 1200.
Wow.
No.
I can't believe you've come this far and you've got a proper green room now.
I know. Dollar bills flying behind us. Look.
Are you serious? Is it episode 1200 bang on?
Bang on.
That's a lot. Yeah. How are you, gentlemen?
Fine and dandy, as always.
I'm good when we're
looking svelte. Both of you look very svelte looking today.
Yeah, well, it's a big topic.
It's a big topic, but I went and visited a client friend yesterday and gave me a cab. He said, go wear that on social tomorrow morning. I said, okay, that.
Beautiful. Any law help, get in touch. Colin, Biggers, we'll see.
Who are these guys, Zach? Do you know them?
They're a pretty big firm in the city, aren't they?
Yeah.
Colin Biggers and Paisley?
Yeah, I think they're one of the sort of top five, top ten, yeah.
Yeah. You've got some friends in high places.
That's some people.
Very good.
So gentlemen, we're talking to you this morning about the biggest cost to one's pocket these days when they're getting a loan, the thing that can influence or swing their loan, the biggest amount that's in their control. Zach, what do you know? Uncle Zach.
Yeah, look, well, I know that a lot of people start their credit journey early, and generally it's a good one. They get a credit card from their bank or something to do with their airline points, and they get approved a limit with, you know, an Amex or a NAB or a Visa or a MasterCard. So I'm talking about credit cards here that, you know, generally with someone before a home loan. And when they go for a home loan, the bank looks at your current situation, which includes any availability to spend. So any existing unsecured debt limits that you might have, such as credit cards. So that's something I see a lot of, in that, you know, someone who's a first home buyer has a $20,000 credit limit on an Amex or a Visa, and they do use it wisely. They pay it out every month, but I suppose, contrary to popular belief, is that regardless of you paying it down every month, the bank's not going to look at that per se, unless it's overdrawn, then in which case it's a bit of an issue. But if you're paying it down every month, great. But if you still have that availability to spend based on that credit card limit being $10,000, $15,000, $20,000,
yeah,
it's a multiple of about four or five in the impact of your borrowing capacity. So if you've got a $10,000 credit card, then, you know, it's roughly $40,000 to $50,000 you can see reducing your borrowing capacity, which is, you know, quite a significant amount, especially for the first home buyers and anyone looking to purchase.
I couldn't believe the amount of money.
Isn't this a stupid game of cat and mouse?
Yeah. I mean, look, as I said, if you pay it down every month, or if you don't use the full limit, then you can reduce it and get back some of your borrowing capacity. It just depends on the goals and objectives, and I guess how people are structured in their life. Some people use them for points, some people use them for other rewards. But I guess what the unsecured credit lenders like to do is give you that maximum limit off the bat, because they want you to spend money. They want you to sort of be in that position where potentially you're in the hole paying maximum interest on the credit card, because they can be like 21, 22% if you're not on a low rate card. And even so, they're still between 11 and 15% as a low rate. So it's a huge cost if you can't manage it. But if you are paying it on, or you're not using the full limit, reduce it, get some borrowing capacity back.
This is the dumbest thing I've heard banks do.
It's a cash cow for them.
It's the dumbest thing I've seen banks do. You know, if anything, so what you'll do is you'll go, okay, well, I've got a credit card with zero on it. I can borrow 10 grand on it, which I'm never going to do. I go to get a loan, they penalize me by 50 grand off the loan. So my broker says, get rid of the credit card. I get rid of the credit card, I get the loan, and then I take the credit card out again, and I'm back to status quo. It is the dumbest thing I've seen banks do.
Yeah, so what, and depending on the credit agency and I guess the timing of things, if you're at your maximum borrowing capacity after you've closed the credit card and then you take out a loan, it's, you know, some of them might not give you that same limit back again, right? So if you've gone from a $20,000 credit card limit to closing that, being at zero, not having one, and then taking out a mortgage, I'm sure there might be a package available with the mortgage that might give you, you know, a $2,000 or $5,000 limit depending on your capacity, but that's where the borrowing capacity really then takes shape. It almost forces you to, I guess, restructure your debt rather than having the unsecured debt into a secured position.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I think this applies to most people. I was reading the Financial Review said the average consumer has a credit card balance, you know, where you can draw up to about $3,100. So you put the 5x multiplier on that, you know, there's your 10 grand saving on your borrowing capacity.
Yeah,
if surely everyone just takes their credit card back out after they get the loan. I know they do.
Yeah, there is a lot of that, and obviously people don't go up to their maximum loan amount, but I guess from our perspective, if you're a first-home buyer and you're getting a pre-approval, we always get the maximum ceiling approved because it's far easier to reduce a loan than increase it again, especially in that crunch time when you're moving to formal approval, you've exchanged a property and, you know, you need to get your ducks in the line. So, but yeah, you're right. A lot of people do go back and take them out afterwards, and it can be within their limits.
The number one question I get asked after this is how much does HEX debt play into your borrowing capacity for a first-time buyer? Come out of uni, now you want to buy a property, you've just done your 3-4 year degree. What does that look like?
Yeah, great question. Look, HEX debt's a funny one because everyone pays it at different times. There are thresholds for when your employer starts paying it and if you're self-employed or you get done at tax time as well. But maybe CBP has some insight into that, Mark. You got the thinking cap on.
I got the thinking cap on.
HEX is basically dollar for dollar unless there's your employer making contributions. So let's say your employer's making a $500 per month contribution. That's out of your gross income that it gets taken out. So the banks work off net income. So sure, you might be on a salary of $100,000 and then you've got a $500 a month deduction on your payslip before your net income is taken home.
Yeah,
that'll affect you between $20,000 and $30,000 of borrowing capacity because it's looked at as the income that you don't have to pay for a loan, right? Whilst it is pre-tax, it's not going into your pocket. So typically dollar for dollar, unless your payslip says employer is contributing X amount, and then it's a sliding scale based on the contribution that's being made. So very easy calculation, but obviously dependent on how much the HEX is, how much your income is, and how much your employer is contributing.
Interesting.
But that's another good one to pay out if you have the funds. But again, it doesn't have that huge impact such as a 5x multiplier of any unsecured debt. So apart from credit cards, car loans, personal loans, even afterpays, like the buy now, pay laters, all of that is...
I like that.
It depends if you've used them regularly or not, and if you've paid them or not. So it all depends on, I guess, the character of the potential borrower, the applicant for the loan. Sure, you might have it and there might be, I think Afterpay is what, 4 payments, I think, and you're done. Is that right?
Don't use it.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think from what I've seen, it's generally 4 payments. So, you know, if you can show that you've got, say, $600 remaining on the Afterpay, but you've got $1,200 in your savings account, well, there's the balance to pay it out right now. So we would just recommend that you clear that so that it's not there for the assessment at the bank. And it would then, again, you know, boost your capacity. Now, obviously, they're smaller amounts, right? Afterpay, I think, is, what, $1,000?
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure how big Afterpay can approve you for, but it's in that same basket of unsecured debt.
Is it also true it's in your best interest to tidy up your bank statement, not go to the races, not go to the betting
brothel, massage?
No massages. That was no winks coming from anyone there. But do the banks look at that as well?
Yeah, so there's the 3 C's of credit, which is what we basically deduce on the basic level, which is character, capacity, and collateral. So it's definitely advantageous.
Can you repeat those?
Character, capacity, and collateral. So you look at the character of the borrower. So that can be seen from their spending habits, if they're always out at the pub, or if they're doing those extracurricular activities that Mark was suggesting, if they're Uber eating and not cooking at home, you can sort of see where their money's going and start to build a bit of a character. If they're, you know, looking for a loan without much savings and using a guarantor, it's like, okay, well, we need to look at, are they paying existing rent? Therefore, are they used to a regular repayment for a living cost?
Yeah.
To look at what sort of character they are. Capacity, directly related to income. So what's their capacity to repay the loan? How much income do they have, less all their expenses and existing repayments, to repay the loan?
Yeah.
And then collateral. Do they have any existing securities? What is their asset position? Super, cash, cars. That's what's behind those 3 C's, which is what we assess when someone comes in the door.
Church.
Big savings on the table.
Yeah, obviously you want to see that regular, you want to see that regularity in the bank statements of, I guess, a reasonable spending pattern. Like, it's funny, we use a few different tools to categorize expenses, and you see the ones that are consistent, they get their income, then it comes down expenses, and then they come back up, and then they go back down again. So it's that regular sort of pulse, that heartbeat in between pay slips. They've got, you know, regular things coming in, regular things going out. One of those things going out is, you know, deposits into their savings account. It's when you see the irregular pulse on where things are going in terms of income or inflows and outflows. It's then you start to scrutinize it a little bit deeper and make sure that whatever we're providing isn't unsuitable for them in terms of a loan product.
Does the bank have software that does it? So does that software go brrr through their savings account statement, go brrr through their credit card statement, and go bing, 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 bad character?
It exactly right. There's not,
without
not
making
so much flashing light, but there's a couple of different tools. Ilion Bank Statements is one that we use, and the banks also use comprehensive credit reporting. So a lot of the major banks have access to what's called CCR, which will give them access and insight into statements once someone's signed up as an application. It's in their loan application documents and their privacy policies to say that, you know, by signing up at this bank, we will be able to see all of your activity, and that information is able to be shared with us from your existing banks, provided that they're on the same platform. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that the banks can see that people don't generally consider. So having a clean set of statements and having a regular sort of inflow and outflow spending pattern is desirable.
And how long do you need to clean up your statement? If I'm going to buy a house in the next year, when should I start cleaning it up?
Yeah, so the banks generally want 3 to 6 months of statements. It'd be 3 months for expenses and up to 6 months of savings.
Okay. So it's not all doom and gloom. If I have been at the pokies and then on the way home for a kebab, you can get it cleaned up.
Yeah, look, I mean,
or massage, Billy.
You're looking a bit stressed, mate.
Very stressed, yeah.
Uptight, highly strung. gambling expenses are an interesting one. So your sports bet deductions or, I mean, you can't really tell when it's going into the pokies per se, but I don't think we're like Vegas yet. We don't have a direct debit machine or a tap function on the pokie machines just yet, but I know they do in Vegas. But if there's cash out for different things and, you know, that's going straight into the pokies, that will generally raise a few questions. That's my job to be going through the statements to actually understand, as I said, the character of the person to see, okay, well, what are these withdrawals for? Like, you know, where's this money going as opposed to if it's going into your savings account or if it's not?
Yeah. Really interesting.
It must be cutting deep in a, that we are no longer a cashless, we're now a cashless society. We're no longer a cash society. And you can run, but you cannot hide. So I think any form of those gambling debts on a statement, even I think location, like if you're in Star City taking out cash, you know, you're not going to fool anyone. So it's going to, and it's up to 6 months, you're saying on your statement. So something to watch out for, some of the people to be careful about is making sure you got a schmick triple C.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I offer a home loan health check so that people can understand what sort of shape they're in prior to actually making decisions. You know, that can spit out exactly what their profile looks like and also give them their purchasing power.
Well, if you can't change your capacity, you can't change the amount you're earning for the short time, you can certainly change the character. So, you know, work on one of those three things and you're on a win.
That's right.
That's good lending advice. Thank you, Uncle Zach, mortgage broker of the universe, for helping us this morning. Hopefully there's people out there this will help. I think even what you're talking about just creates even a posture or a pattern where, you know, you may not go, bang, there's your loan tomorrow. But when you hear what you've been speaking about today from the mortgage broker perspective, you can go, okay, well, over the next weeks, month, you know, year ahead, this is the way I'm gonna approach things. Less of a surprise when you go to get the loan.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess the whole crux of it is getting rid of the unsecured debts, maximize the capacity.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Au revoir. Bye, everyone. Hope this helped you today. Thank you for the cap, Colin's Biggest Paisley. It's the most comfortable cap in Australia.